This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face to face with business decisions. Online at www.bgov.com. And of course on the air Thursdays at 11 and Fridays at 2:30 right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Well, we've got another State of the Union address in the books. President Barack Obama made statements during which politicians either sat or stood, depending on what their respective leaders did in the front of the house. That aside, there was an interesting development in the world of cybersecurity. Did you hear it? Well, if you missed it, Bloomberg Government's technology analyst Afzal Bari will be here to fill you in shortly. But we're going to kick off the program with a mouthful of words I actually never thought I'd hear myself string together. What do guns, the Affordable Care Act, mental health, and drug makers all have in common? You're stumped, right? You probably need like a joining word, like maybe grapefruit, to help you out. Okay, maybe not. Bloomberg Government's Director of Healthcare Analysis, Matt Berry, has co-authored a new study entitled Shootings May Drive Mental Health Demand, Benefit Drug Makers, and he joins me now.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
What possessed you to open up this can of worms, so to speak, and make these connections?
Well, I think part of it is just what we do here at Bloomberg Government. It's Even in a tragedy, there are implications of, what is the government response going to be to that tragedy? In this case, Sandy Hook. And I mean, obviously, there's been tragedies before that when it comes to gun violence. Obviously, this was one that really struck a deep chord with the nation. And the discussion afterwards was all about what can we do about guns and what can we do about mental health?
Right.
And so we thought, well, part of what we can look at is the mental health component of this. I mean, what would it take to provide treatment to all those in this country who have a mental illness? What's the price tag on that? How are we doing right now? And, for us at least, is looking at the business equation of that. Even though it might seem unseemly to some people,
Sure. There
is a dollar to be made off of government spending. And so we're able to connect the dots on a lot of this.
One of the things that I found kind of alarming was a statistic that you pointed out right there in the introduction. It had to do with people with a true mental illness. Only 40% of them are receiving treatment at this point.
That's the best estimate right now. It is startling, and it speaks to the need. It has long been a neglected issue in this country, and I think that's a statistic that's a reminder of that. So, I mean, a majority of people who have a mental illness are going untreated right now, and that's
could be for various reasons.
Absolutely, there's a whole spectrum of illness. I mean, from anxiety disorders to very severe mental illness, from depression and psychoses and things like that that are left untreated, and some of them can lead to big problems.
Social stigmatism associated with it. There may be reasons like that. Homeless, benefits, people who don't have them, and now with the Affordable Care Act coming online, 2014 could be one where we spend more than the $174 billion we've spent in the past on this topic.
Actually, the 174 is what we're projecting will be would be spent in 2014. Actually, even before the Affordable Care Act and the expansions under Medicaid and private insurance take effect. That was one of the challenges in this study is, unfortunately, like a lot of issues where there's government data involved, there's a lag. The most current data before this of how much we're spending as a country on mental illness was from 2005. Where it was only, the estimate there was about $113 billion was being spent. So before we did anything in this, we had to kind of just update those numbers and just try and see where are we today. Or where will we be at the beginning of next year when the provisions of this new law take effect? And that's what brought us to this $174 billion, which is kind of just the starting point before you start adding people in through Medicaid, through private insurance under the new law.
So taking a look at that, where do you think we're going to end up projecting out to the future?
Well, the models that we did, we did a couple things. We assumed, and I think it's a big assumption that one could debate, but we assumed that Medicaid, that all states would expand their Medicaid programs starting next year. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen, but for modeling purposes, we showed what it would look like if everybody kind of jumped in the pool at the same time. And to address the utilization issue, the fact that right now only 40% of people get treatment, we said, what if you increased that up to 70%? Not even getting to 100, but even, and getting to 70 would be a significant increase. But we think because anywhere from 4 million or more people with a mental illness are expected to gain new insurance coverage under the Affordable Care Act, pretty much fairly evenly split between Medicaid and private insurance. Mm-hmm. So between that increase in access to insurance coverage, and I think what we'd expect is more both public and private campaigns and efforts to destigmatize getting and seeking treatment for mental illness, and you know, so and encouraging people to be more proactive to prevent the next Sandy Hook, and hopefully maybe identify people who might be prone to doing something that would lead to violence. We would expect to see that utilization increase, which at the end of the day, we're saying in 2014 alone, if you had all those states expand Medicaid, if you had a 30 percentage point increase, you'd get to about $300 billion in spending in 2014. If you carry that out to, we looked from 2014 to 2021, so over an 8-year period of time, you would also see just in Medicaid alone with those same assumptions an additional increase in the federal deficit of about $250 to $260 billion in additional spending. That's not baked in to the CBO projections of the Affordable Care Act that right now. It's really all based on a significant increase in utilization of care and access to treatment for these people.
One of the major beneficiaries of this potential spending, obviously, is drug makers. Better living through chemistry, you know. Once that stigmatism is reduced and the benefits roll out, where you've got an additional 30% now utilizing them, what are we talking about dollar-wise as we look at the top 10, let's say, drug manufacturers?
Well, we did take a look at that. Since we had data through for the most recent year, for 2012, in terms of the top 10 drug makers of psychotherapeutic drugs, these are antidepressants, antipsychotics type medications. In 2012, those top 10 drug makers had revenue for just these classes of drugs of about $33 billion. We estimated that if you applied a 30 percentage point increase in those revenues to those 2012 numbers, that number would increase to about $58 billion, almost doubling it. So it would be a significant increase. And right now, at least for adults, over half of the cost of treatment for someone with a mental illness is coming from drugs. So it is set to, you know, really reap the rewards of increased spending if this country chooses to go in that direction.
I'm just startled at the numbers we're talking about here. This is insane.
It's a big market, and it speaks to the need.
Yeah. Sadly speaks to the need. Yeah. But you know what? If you need help, you need help. Yeah. And if you have the benefits
these,
now to go get it.
And these drugs work, and the more people that can get them, hopefully the better.
Understood. You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is the Director of Healthcare Analysis, Mr. Matt Berry. Right now, we're kind of breaking down his latest Bloomberg Government study. It's called Shootings May Drive Mental Health Demand, Benefits Drug Makers. And another startling statistic, I've already found one in here as we thumb through the study. It's the National Association of State Mental Health Program Directors estimates that nearly a third of adults have met diagnostic criteria for a behavioral problem in the past year. One third of adults.
That's a lot of people.
That's both of us in this room.
Absolutely. At least.
That's a startling statistic. What are the criteria that they're using for something like this?
Well, again, it goes to, I mean, there's a whole spectrum of illnesses that you're talking about. I mean, from fairly very manageable issues of anxiety disorders to major depressive illnesses. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people, you know, do go without a diagnosis. The good news is for people who are diagnosed, who do get treatment, for the most part, those illnesses are manageable, and they, you know, people are no more prone to either violent behavior or other behavioral issues than people without a diagnosis.
Right.
So the treatment's there if people have access to it and take advantage of it.
One of the things that's in here, you'll find in Section 2, shooting may change states' calculus. Newton, Connecticut, obviously a big opportunity for one to sit back, as you described a little while ago, and kind of assess where we are with what's going on with the connection between guns and mental health, because it's obvious that the person up there had an issue.
Yes.
Lots of money is going to be spent on this, but there's a chart in here, payer mix for total mental health spending in 2005. I guess it's, like you said,
sure,
the last bit of data that we had. I find it interesting that state and local is 18%.
It's mostly state and local services, whether it's through local health departments, local state,
okay,
and local mental health programs and services that are available in the communities, whether it's providing access to medications,
right,
counseling, and things like that.
12% of it out of pocket, people who have actually walked in and said, you know what, I have a problem. Those are people who are, the stigmatism has dropped completely, and they realize there's a problem and they're willing to pay for it themselves.
And it's actually that out of pocket money and some of the existing federal grant money, mm-hmm, that is expected to largely be redistributed once the Affordable Care Act provisions take effect.
Sure.
So basically almost splitting those going forward between Medicaid and private insurance is at least what's built into our model.
Right. And of course, the out-of-pocket money is the money that the providers look for the most, because there's no one skimming off the top from that.
Sure.
No one saying that you can't pay X, Y, or Z for that service that we've deemed far less than what you're billing us for.
One aspect that I think the providers, both doctors and hospitals and others, are going to want is the fact that a lot of these people now are going to have insurance.
Sure.
So they're not going to have unpaid debts and charity care and things like that that they will have to write off. So they'll actually be reimbursed more regularly for those services that they render.
So given the numbers that we've been talking about and what you've projected, we've got a lot of money being laid out on the table,
sure,
at this point on mental health services. Congress, I would assume, has at least a little responsibility in some of this, he,
sure,
said with a little grin on his face. What are the next steps that they need to take? What are the paths they have at their option at this point, at their disposal?
Well, on some level, Congress...
Obviously, we're talking nationally.
Sure.
And state and local is,
sure,
going to be completely different.
On some level, Congress doesn't necessarily have to do a lot, simply because a lot of this access to treatment is now in the law. It's,
mm-hmm,
it's part of the Affordable Care Act that goes into effect in, you know, less than 10 months from now, in January of 2014.
Right.
So actually, the more action that needs to take place really is at the state level. It's states choosing whether or not they are going to expand their Medicaid programs.
Right.
And actually, it's more likely that the insurance expansion is going to have more of an effect in the private insurance market, at least initially, than in Medicaid, because for the private insurance expansion, it doesn't matter whether or not the states are going to opt in or not to expand their programs. That expansion is going to happen whether the states choose to run it or the federal government is going to run those exchanges for them. And then it's more a question of how quickly and how many states are going to expand their Medicaid programs over the coming years. So that will certainly have an effect on how much money is spent and how that affects the federal deficit, and also how it impacts possible revenue for drug makers and other health providers.
Private insurance companies, obviously, can set their own rules. They don't necessarily have to pay for this, should they desire not to, correct? Is that an accurate statement?
Well, actually, in the Affordable Care Act, the essential health benefits do have requirements
for
mental health services to be included as part of that essential benefit package. What that essential package looks like on a state-to-state basis is likely to vary, and how,
okay,
much flexibility states have to do that is part of the question mark here.
Lots of question marks, including the caveats that may be around the data itself, because we're projecting a lot.
Sure.
Give me an idea of one or two of the hurdles that we may be looking at in the study itself.
Well, there's question marks with regard to just how many people are going to use these services, even when they get access to it through insurance. You know, just how much of an uptake, how much more of an increase are you going to get from the 40% that are getting treatment now? What's the ceiling going to be on that? Sure. Are we going to get close to 70%? Is it going to be 50%? We just don't know right now. Second is the Medicaid question. How many states are going to expand their programs and how fast are they going to do it? But to me, the biggest question in all of this is, will it work?
Right.
Is if we are trying, if the point of a lot of the response to Sandy Hook is, let's get the people who have a mental illness the treatment that they need so that we can prevent or better predict and prevent the next major act of gun violence in this country. The unfortunate truth is the literature on this topic is very weak and very thin. It really doesn't show a connection between increasing access to mental health services and reducing gun violence.
Right.
There's some data that suggests for some very targeted diagnoses, people with certain types of psychoses, that they may be more prone to violence in general,
mm-hmm.
and treatment can help that and help prevent an episode of violence. But in terms of the specific issue of if we increase access to treatment, we will lower the incidence of gun violence. We can't say that right now. Now, is there a broader societal good from expanding access to treatment to mental health services?
Of course.
I don't think anybody is going to argue that that is a good thing.
Right.
But to sell this on some level under the guise that this will help prevent the next Sandy Hook, I think is overstating the facts or taking them where we don't have them right now, which is why I think there needs to be more directed research mm-hmm. in this area to really answer that question. But, you know, on the specific issue of gun violence, because we just don't have it right now. And people, I think, want it to be there. It feels right. It's totally understandable that people want to feel and be seen as doing something in response to such a horrific thing
right.
that happened. And they want to, you know, prevent the next one. Everybody does. But at the same time, you don't want to give people false hope either,
right.
that we're doing something and this will prevent the next one from happening. Because I don't think anybody can look someone else in the eye and say that with any certainty.
Right. They pop up all the time. This study, Shootings May Drive Mental Health Demand, Benefits Drug Makers, ends up on the desk of the NRA. What do you think their response is?
Well, on some level, I hope it does, because I think if nothing else, this is an important set of data that everybody in this debate should be aware of,
mm-hmm.
because right now the debate is being held in the absence of kind of any kind of quantification of what does this mean in terms of how much does it cost, how much should we be spending, who's going to benefit. I mean, there are those who would argue, you know, there's no price that is too big to pay to prevent even one needless death, and I understand that sentiment, but we also live in very austere fiscal times, and we need some sense of what we think this will cost. I mean, this is one estimate. There may be others that have different estimates, but if I were the NRA, I think this would be useful information for them. I mean, they've been talking about the need for more mental health services, but I'm not sure if either side of this debate has necessarily been talking about the issues of mental health services in the context of, you know, how much we could be spending and whether we're targeting it at the right issues within the kind of the spectrum of mental health issues and how we can, you know, best leverage those dollars and have the maximum impact that we all want to see.
Definitely food for thought as we continue the post-mortem of the Sandy Hook tragedy. His name is Matt Berry, Director of Healthcare Analysis at Bloomberg Government. Shootings May Drive Mental Health Demand, Benefit Drug Makers. Do read it. It is an interesting and eye-opening study that you definitely don't want to miss. Matt, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We've got an update of sorts on something that we spoke of I guess it was a few weeks back, we had technology analyst Afzal Bari on the show. How are you, Afzal?
Doing well.
So during the State of the Union, the president dropped a bombshell. Tell us what it was, among other things.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so, you know, the State of the Union has a lot of policy perspectives, a lot of vision. But the president actually announced something that an action that he took earlier that day, which was signing an executive order relating to cybersecurity.
Ding, 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 ding. Finally. Although we didn't want it the executive order way, did we?
Well, not a lot of people in town wanted it. You know, Congress has been talking about cybersecurity legislation for about a year and a half to 2 years.
Right.
And
let Congress, it die with the 112th, basically.
Yeah, Congress wasn't able to come to an agreement. There was a Republican proposal, there were a couple of Democratic proposals, and they weren't able to come to an agreement. And the president, for about 4 months, has been shopping around town an executive order, partly to put pressure on Congress, but partly to act and to actually to move the ball forward. So
this is going to have some big implications with regard to regulations. It's going to talk about opportunities, especially contracts, money, ding, 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 people putting money in their pockets, right?
Sure, yeah. So one of the things that they're looking to do is increase the situational awareness for cybersecurity. So being able to understand all the cybersecurity threats that are out there on the private sector within the critical infrastructure. So if you're DHS, you want to know if power plants are being hacked, you want to know if banks are being hacked, and you want to know if that's happening in a coordinated fashion. Part of doing that is being able to set up, they're setting up two centers. One is relating to physical critical infrastructure, another is relating to cyber critical infrastructure. And those centers are going to be the nodes for that situational awareness. But that also means new systems, it potentially new projects to be able to pull in that information and act as that central clearinghouse.
Sounds great. I got an idea. We're running out of time this week. I'd like to get you and Alan Holmes to come in and tell us what all this means with this new cybersecurity executive order. Would you do that for me? You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now it's time to turn to the world of lobbying, as we often want to do. This time it's for Valentine's Day. His name is Dr. Peter Brusso, and he knows where this money is being spent. Hey, Peter.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. So there's a lot of money being spent all over.
Sure. So one of the things at Bloomberg Government that we try to show is how consumer decisions can often drive government action.
Mm-hmm.
We started to analyze the various things that people were spending. So say, for example, you bought that special someone that chocolate-filled heart. Hershey Company spent about $1.2 million lobbying on sugar, peanut, and dairy programs with the United States Department of Agriculture. And these are very important to Hershey's bottom line because it affects what they're paying for the stuff to make the chocolate.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, if peanut costs go up or if dairy production subsidies fall, it's going to be more expensive to produce that piece of chocolate. More expensive to produce that piece of chocolate, they pass the cost on the consumer. That's less money that they have to spend. It also freezes people out of their price points. But say you're not a Hershey person. Say you like the Nestle. Nestle is a huge food conglomerate, and they actually spend a lot of money on the Food Safety Modernization Act, as well as sodium issues. Because sodium helps them preserve their product in terms of how much salt you put in certain objects.
Okay.
And one of the things that we're realizing as a country is that sodium is also not necessarily good for you. It creates hypertension and other issues.
His name is Dr. Peter Brusso, talking lobbying on behalf of companies that vie for your interests around Valentine's Day. Peter, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Alan.
And with that, we'll call it a day on this edition of Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact. Make sure to watch BGov's Capital Gains with Bloomberg Television's Peter Cook on WUSA TV9 at 11:30 in the morning. That's immediately following Face the Nation, Sundays at 11:30. Make sure to follow Bloomberg Government on Twitter at BGov. Follow me for show updates and random bits of nothingness, of course, at Alan L. Scott. We'll be back next week with plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.